Kingdom Pursuits, where you hear from ordinary people instilled with an extraordinary passion. Together, we explore the stories of men and women who take what they love and let God turn their passion into kingdom pursuits. Now, live from the Truth Booth, your host, Robbie Dillmore.
We are so grateful that you have tuned in today to join us on Kingdom Pursuits, and what a treat we have really for you. I am so excited to share. God continues to just put amazing people in our paths that we get to share with you. And one of ours, first up, is a young man by the name of David Scott. And David is part of an amazing short film that's just being released on March the 8th. I hope everybody, I cannot tell you how good it is, what the cinematography is like, but more importantly, the issues that are related to abortions and adoption. And it's really right there in the middle of your life, right, David?
That's right. It really is. Adoption is the reason that I was given life, and it's the reason I'm here today.
And so we've got a trailer that we want to play for you at the break. You're going to get a chance to hear that. But more wonderfully, you're going to get to hear some of David's story, some of his birth mom's story, some of his adopted mom's story. The whole thing is just, you can see God so clearly with it, and I know you're going to enjoy finding out about this movie coming out. We're going to get to all that in a minute. But second up, we have, you know, a sort of a special edition for you today with my good friend. I've had him on many times, Michael Austin, who apparently we lost, or maybe we lost David. But anyway, my good friend Michael Austin, who is with Christian History Magazine, and they have just announced their issue 111, which is Billy Graham, Apostle of Changed Lives and Second Chances. So we're going to be hearing a lot from Michael this morning on a lot that I think you may not know about Billy Graham. Of course, he's a historian, so he has some information that we're going to get to share on that. And I know you're going to be blessed to hear Michael. But, of course, it is Kingdom Pursuits. So on Kingdom Pursuits, we always got to have Robbie's riddle. So speaking of live and babies, did you know that a test tube baby has a womb with a view? I don't know if you've ever thought about that. Test tube baby has a womb with a view. And despite pressure to clean up their act, most dirtbags live in a vacuum. I don't know if you knew that. And that, there's this question. Are people that live in both the Arctic and the Antarctic called pollsters? This is all stuff you can think about this morning. We're going through this list. And those who live beyond their means should act their wage. That you caught the word live in there. Those who live beyond their means should act their wage. And I tried passing myself off as a twin, but I couldn't live with myself. So with all that said, we did have to get actually to the riddle. And the riddle today is, you know, sadly, one of the themes in the Bible that comes on time and time again is baby killing. And so I was wondering, who do you feel like was the first baby killer in the Bible? Interesting story. 866-348-7884, 866-34-TRUTH. Who do you feel like was the first baby killer in the Bible? And now I do have Michael on. Michael, welcome back to Kingdom Pursuits. It's good to have you.
Thank you, Robbie. Great to be with you. And once again, you've put a smile on my face.
I particularly like the test tube baby with a, you know, womb with a view. That's the one that really just, my producer is actually tickled. He laughs on not all my puns, but he's listening. He's laughing about that one. But what a neat thing that you had a chance to do this study on Billy Graham you know, heaven's just more real to me now as a result. Can you share with our listeners a little bit about what they might learn today?
Well, Billy Graham was an amazing evangelist who arguably, I say, he reached more people than anyone in history. And he's just a great inspiration. and a great advocate for life. And one of the reasons I have a smile on my face is that David is with us. And wow, that would what a great
am I on?
Yeah, what a great inspiration.
Go ahead, David.
Hey, I'm sorry about everybody right now, and I guess my call kind of failed.
That's all right. It's all right. It's great to have you back. But it is kind of cool that we have Michael with us here from Christian History Magazine talking about Billy Graham, because he was so strong on that particular issue that undoubtedly he, you know, his effect might have had something to do with your life. Can you hear me, Michael? I mean, David?
Yes, I can hear you now. I can hear you now.
Okay. So, you know, obviously your mother's choices, your birth mother's choices really were a big part of your early story that you didn't really know much about until later in life. When did you find out about some of those things?
So my parents have always been...
Wow, we're struggling with that connection. And so we're going to hear more from David in a minute. We're going to go back to Michael in this case. Michael, so when did you decide, it's interesting, when did you guys decide to begin the research on Billy Graham?
Well, the issue itself came out in 2014. It's issue 111 of the Christian History Magazine. And it was one idea, one story on a very long list that they maintain. And I'm frequently asked, "Gee, can you get me on the Christian History in the Christian History Magazine?" And I have to tell people, you know, it's a quarterly magazine. There are so many subjects that are on their very, very long list, and I have absolutely no influence on that whatsoever. But I'm so grateful for this issue and have been expecting the day of the passing of Billy Graham since its publication, like I say, was back in 2014. So, and it's fascinating because in preparation for the show today, I've been rereading the articles in the magazine. And, you know, what struck me today was that that so much of Billy Graham's success and ability to communicate the gospel was through the media, which we're having a little bit of difficulty today, a little technical difficulty, but that would not be a stranger to Billy Graham, because he overcame so many issues with the media, both technically and otherwise. But it's amazing how his history, his life, spanned the enormous growth of the media and the press and radio. And of course, the Billy Graham Association owns a very successful radio network to this very day. But he was an innovator. He was an extraordinary communicator. And of course, we can go on and on about him in various ways. But I admire him so much for his stand on life and unabashedly pro-life throughout. Again, very, very grateful that David is with us, and I hope we're able to reconnect with him.
Yeah, they're in New York this morning as we're getting ready for the National Religious Broadcasters Convention, as are you. Well, I guess you're not going to be there this year. But
don't know about that. Never know until it happens. So yeah. I might find myself up there.
So I'm leaving Tuesday morning. I think Stu is and Michael are leaving on Monday. We'll be there next week along, and I'll get a chance to meet David in person. But I think we got him on another line now, so we're going to hear more from him when we get back. But, of course, we need your answer to who do you think was the first baby killer in the Bible? 866-348-7884. Call in and win one of our books from the Kingdom Pursuits Tribes package. 866-34-TRUTH.
It's Tomorrow, I'm going to hop on a train, and I will meet my birth parents for the first time. This has been 19 years in the making, and I'm extremely nervous.
I want to see what he looks like in person, his voice, his smile, my hug I've been waiting for.
Kind of wondered, you know, does he hate us? Yeah, I think it's caused a lot of depression from time to time.
The reality is David was seconds, literally, from not being here. It's kind of a bittersweet because I wanted him.
We're going to all fill in this missing piece of the puzzle that has been in all three of our lives.
It's going to be an overwhelming experience.
I'm nervous, but I'm really excited. I remember all these protesters being lined up. I remember this lady saying, yeah, baby has 10 fingers and 10 toes, and you're gonna kill it. So all those people, when I was walking out, they thought I did it.
I don't wanna live my life not ever knowing what might have been.
The amazing short film being released on March 8th, I Lived on Parker Avenue. That's I Lived on Parker Avenue, issues related to abortions and adoptions today on Kingdom Pursuits. Of course, you can find that all at kingdompursuits.com, as well as Michael Austin's here with Christian History Magazine and their issue 111, which was on the Apostle, or excuse me, on Billy Graham, Apostle of Changed Lives. We don't want to go too far there, but anyway, David, as I listened to that trailer, and I actually added some sound bites to some parts that would have been visual,
sure.
I was just, well, I actually got a chance to see the film this week. I can't believe how many tears were shed by my boss when he saw the film. This film really touches people in a place of identity, because to an extent we all feel like we're orphans, right?
Right, absolutely. This film has been able to touch so many individuals, so many people around the country, and it's been a blessing. And absolutely, we're all adopted children by God. So this film hits even more than more people than you think. Absolutely.
Yeah, the reason I chose those sound bites to put in there where she talked about the baby having 10 fingers and 10 toes, you know, tell a little bit about your mother and the decision that she made. It was quite heroic.
It absolutely was, and I thank her every day for that decision. Back in 1993, she was not married, she didn't have any money saved, she was pregnant, and she had no idea what to do. And the only thing that came to her mind was to have an abortion. And she decided to go to the abortion clinic in Indianapolis back in 1993. And as she was walking into the abortion clinic, ready to abort her child, there were some pro-life protesters that were outside. Some of them were praying for her, some of them were not too nice to her. But one woman from the sidewalk told her that her baby had 10 fingers and 10 toes. And Melissa heard those words, but still went inside the clinic and actually was on the abortion doctor's table ready to abort her child. And she just thought back to what that lady told her and realized that her baby was special, that her baby was never someone special. And so she decided to make the courageous and brave decision to choose adoption. And that's ultimately why I'm able to be on this show today.
And then there was another courageous mom, wasn't there? The one that had been through some horrific losses of her own children, and she kept on pushing for a child.
Absolutely.
And so you had another very courageous mother that was in your life. Tell us about her.
She is an amazing mom. I love her to death. She had two children that were unable to, I don't know what the technical word for it was, but they didn't live very long. And so she was unable to have a child, and all she wanted was a child. And she was able to go through with the adoption through the adoption attorneys, Kirsch in Indiana. And she is the most loving, Jesus-like woman that I know. And so I'm proud and blessed to have an amazing mom and also an amazing birth mother.
Yeah, and the film points to that, and believe me, you are going to be excited when that comes out on March the 8th. You can find out all about it at kingdompursuits.com. But I don't want to leave out the fathers. that I,
right.
I because they are clearly a big part of what happened in so many different ways. And so the film spends a lot of time on your relationship with your mother, but I really, really thought it was cool how it showed you and your birth dad and your real dad going down the lake in the canoe, because that's something that you like, that you love to do, that makes your heart come alive.
Absolutely.
Tell me what that's like to engage with both those dads.
It's incredible. I mean, it was, I think in the film you can clearly see that it was a little awkward for me when I met my birth father. Because, like, you know, it's kind of like, what do you say to him? Like, after 18 years. So it was just like we had that first awkward conversation. But after that, I mean, it just felt like extended family as soon as I met them. And it was awesome to be able to go do what I love to do and outdoors, be in the outdoors, go canoeing with my birth father and my dad. So, again, it's the same way for my birth mother and mom. I'm blessed to have my dad, and I'm also blessed to have my biological father. But it's also important for me to keep those distinctions that my parents, you know, some people, there's some stigmas behind adoption that an adoptive parents are not really the true parents, and that's just not true. So that's important to me to maintain those distinctions and realize that my dad is my dad and my birth father is my birth father.
Yeah, absolutely. And I want to bring Michael Austin into the conversation. You've obviously had a chance to study so many men's lives, but another part of that movie that's a little more subtle, unless you're watching carefully, is there's a grandfather and there's a grandmother that make
right.
the trip with you. And so here's like generations, Michael. And did you see that in Billy Graham's life? What was Billy Graham's parents like? What were his grandparents like? Did you look into that at all?
Oh, yes. I would say half of this issue on the magazine deals with his family life. And that was one of his major themes in preaching throughout his ministry, was the sacredness of life and the sacredness of the family. And, of course, Franklin Graham is continuing his legacy and is also speaking out on this issue. I've had the privilege of meeting both Franklin and his son, Will Graham, who the family claims is the real evangelist after Billy. And, you know, both huge family men. And this is, you know, I would say that after our Lord and Savior, the gift of the family is perhaps the greatest gift that our Heavenly Father has given us.
Yeah, it's an amazing thing that when I think about it, you know, my own grandfather undoubtedly prayed for me long before I had a clue what it meant to be a Christian. You know, all those things that led to so much of what I am really came, you know, from a deep heritage in places. And adoption is a big part of that because, you know, it's an interesting thing, David, in Mark chapter 10, you know, Jesus talks about that if you leave, you know, father, mother, sisters, brother, for my sake and the sake of the gospel, you won't fail to receive 100 times as many mothers, fathers, excuse me, it doesn't say fathers, you'll not fail to receive 100 times as many mothers, sisters, fathers, brothers, and lands. That in the Christian life, we end up with so many of those people that play a remarkable part in our life. And so one of the brothers I think that you've adopted or has adopted you is Ben. Tell us about Ben.
Ben is incredible. Ben is the executive director of the Louisiana Right to Life and also the executive director of Zwabzi Media, which is the production company that is the host and sponsor of I Live on Parker Avenue. And Ben has given me opportunities to flourish and just become myself. And that's really been through the film. It was back in 2010, I shared the story for the first time ever at a school-wide mass at Jesuit New Orleans in front of an all-guy school, which is a terrifying audience to share something like this in front of for the first time. And after that, Louisiana Right to Life director Ben heard about the story, and we developed a relationship. And then he'd have me come speak at some of his events, and we just kind of became friends. And then out of the blue, I heard from my birth mother for the first time and learned who she was and got a chance to realize what their lives were like 24 years ago. And at that point, we planned on meeting. And Ben, as the great entrepreneur he is, heard about this and out of the blue asked me if I wanted to have it filmed. And that's an awkward question to be asked, but deciding yes was the best decision, one of the best decisions I've made in my life, because we've been able to impact hundreds of thousands of people on this message, and it's been amazing.
And are you going to be in Nashville next week with Ben?
I actually will not be. I'm actually a second-year law student.
Good for you.
I try to make as much as I can. Right. I'm trying to swing law school and the film, doing the best I can.
Yeah, I see that completely. But I was thinking that, you know, it's just fascinating to me how God orchestrated this particular situation. I don't know who did the cinematography on that film, but I see a lot of films. I screen a lot of films, as you might imagine. I was like, this is a 30-minute film. I was expecting something, and what I got from the cinematography was like, oh, my word, these people really did this thing right. What was up with that?
So that is another exact example of God's blessing. He gave us an amazing guy called Philip Braun, and he's also in New Orleans, and he is the key behind this film. He took a week's worth of footage and spliced it, and like you said, has amazing cinematography skills, and molded it into this 30-minute film. And without him, this film would not be so powerful. So for 5 years, I met them in 2013. For the past 5 years, it's been me, Ben, and Philip, a three-man team.
Oh, it's amazing. I hate we got to go to a break, but we are going to come back with more from David Sutton and Michael Austin. This amazing film, again, is called I Lived on Parker Avenue. It's at KingdomPursuits.com. Welcome back to Kingdom Pursuits, where we hear how God takes your passion and uses it to build the kingdom. And today we have some wonderful, wonderful guests. We have David Scotton. He is really the star of the film, I Lived on Parker Avenue, Issues Related to Abortions and Adoptions. And just a powerful film. We're going to do a screening at the National Religious Broadcasters Convention next week here with the Truth Network. We're excited about hosting that, and I look forward to seeing the look on people's face like mine, like, oh, my goodness, this thing is so well done. It is just so powerful. The music is done well. The cinematography is done well. And as you may know, I mix Christian Carguy Theater, so I'm familiar with the production that goes into some of that, and I'm like, wow, this thing is awesome. Awesome. And speaking of Austin, we have Michael Austin, Christian History Magazine. And their issue 111, Billy Graham, the Apostle of Changed Lives and Second Chances. And Michael, as I was thinking about, you know, David and this film, that one of the things that I think really affected the effectiveness of Billy Graham was his use of media and how God put people in his life to get him on TV and connect. You know, he had those films that he did, and in so many different ways, he embraced technology as an evangelist as a way nobody else did.
Yes, he did. And he was a pioneer in that regard, came under a lot of criticism, claims that the use of the media would cause you to go to hell. And he forged ahead. There's a couple of articles in the issue that speaks of that history. And I would be remiss, by the way, if I did not mention that the founder of the magazine, Ken Curtis, was a filmmaker, a documentarian, and his company, Vision Video, I must say, would be extremely interested in David's production. And I hope there's a chance to make a connection there. But Ken Curtis, who was a producer of the famous film The Cross and the Switchblade, among many, many others, dozens of others, but he had a heart for telling people's story, and that's the role of the documentarian filmmaker. And so, they would be extremely interested in this production. But there is a link here in terms of, and David spoke of the importance of telling this story and how a film can tell the story like no other medium. And so I've experienced myself. I was a film student back in the 60s when I was coming up. It did lead me not into the film business, but certainly into the communications business. And it was very interesting. One interesting item that you might find amusing is that when Billy Graham was experimenting, let's say, with television in the very early years of television, this was back in the early 50s, 1951, he actually was interviewed on that on the scandalous thing that he's involving himself with called television. And he explained the impact and the power of the visual media to tell the story. And he also made the famous quote at that time in terms of evangelism. He said, "I would not call it show business." He made a distinction between show business and evangelism. And so, you know, just another tidbit of his discernment and his ability to communicate truth. And so, media. He was a media star.
And when I think about, you know, a big part of Billy Graham's story was his courage. And honestly, David, when I saw your birth mother's courage to share the real details of what happened at that clinic that day, it just kind of knocked me over.
Like, yeah.
You're just going to, you know, show the world here you are at the darkest place in your life, and this is what happened. But not just her, but all the people in your family willing to take part in that film, because, you know, I know being in the media, everybody doesn't jump up and say, "Oh, yeah, I want to be in the movie."
Oh, I know. Hey, you know, some people think that I really wanted to do that. And in the beginning, I did not want to do that. When Ben came to me, when we talked about earlier, you know, I prayed about it for a long time. This is something that was really important to me. It's private. It's not something that people usually want to publicize, right? And we, after praying about it and realizing that we really had an opportunity here to just give back to the cause that gave me life, that's ultimately why I decided to do it. And so, and once I found out that my parents and grandparents were even more excited than I was, that's when I really was okay with it.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing the adventures that God sends us on, which is really behind the theme of this show, is how does God take your passion and use it to build the kingdom? And it's kind of like when you obey and do what you feel God has led you to do, he takes you on this wild adventure that you never would have dreamed in a million years that you're going to be in a movie and that you'd be on a radio station in North Carolina and Virginia and all sorts of places talking about, you know, what God's done in your life. But what's even going to be cooler, David, is someday we're going to be in heaven. And there's going to be somebody that saw that movie, heard this broadcast, whatever, and chose life as a result, or chose to share some message with somebody that said 10 fingers and 10 toes in front of somewhere. Who knows? It's just like, wow, it's remarkable what's been given to us. We now have a chance to share with that. But tell us about, so you're a law student there in New York?
We were on Fox News earlier this morning, and that's why I'm in New York right now. But that just goes to show God's really working through us to get us on even Fox News. But I'm a law student in Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
And so tell us about that. Tell us about, as a believer, you know, the law is an interesting thing to jump into, and from my standpoint, you know, Christian lawyers, it's a very fascinating line that they walk. And tell us kind of your thought process as you walk into that, you know, on a completely different note.
Right. I've definitely experienced a lot of that. But I will say, you know, I'm not at like a New York University law school. I'm in Baton Rouge, so it's generally a little more conservative.
Right.
But even in a more conservative law school, there's still that line between, you know, you're following God's command, you're following God's path for you. And legally, that may not be the reality. The laws may not be designed to foster that path. And that's been a little frustrating to me, especially when, you know, I am interested in adoption law. I could see myself practicing adoption law and continuing to follow this path that he's put me on. But in Louisiana, the laws are not too friendly to private attorneys who want to practice adoption. So that's kind of like, I guess that's an example of trying to follow God's path and the law not necessarily being in your favor. But being in law school, you know, I would say I got more of that in undergrad, more of the questioning whether God exists kind of thing in undergrad than I do in law school. Absolutely.
Yeah, it's going to be fascinating to see how God takes you, you know, on this journey. We lost Michael again. That, you know, he's building on something. You know, it's clear that, you know, 2 Corinthians chapter 1, that God comforts us in all troubles, that we would comfort others with the comfort that he gave us. And in a way, you didn't even know the trouble you were in.
Right.
And I can't help but wonder how, you know, you said some very stunning things that I heard in the film talking about. I had no idea that my life was at risk or that I ever was in an abortion clinic, but you literally were there.
Right. Yeah. And that makes it even the more real when I went back and stood outside the clinic, I almost didn't leave. It was almost real just in the fact that, wow, like, I've actually been in that building before. Here I am 18 years later. It's just like, it was just like full circle to me.
And so you have a rare gift, I think, David, of seeing, we'll all get to see it in heaven, how close we came. But I would venture to say that Satan's been trying to get at every single one of us since we were babies. Mm-hmm. And so there was a point in time in my life that, you know, he got the closest to, my mother tells the story that actually when she was pregnant with me, that she lived in Idaho and up on the top of this mountain. And of course, they didn't wear seatbelts and all that kind of stuff in those. And it snowed one time, and the road was filled with ice. And she slid down the mountain. And when she got to the bottom of the hill, you know, there was a policeman that was kind of standing by. And he said, I just watched this car come down this mountain. And I thought, there is no way in the world that you are going to make it. And how you ended up here, I was watching. It's impossible because I've seen so many other cars go there. And there she was pregnant with me at the time. It was like, well, it was my moment that I didn't even know. Of course, I was safe and sound as far as I was concerned.
Right.
Wow. So what is the, you know, now that you've been on this journey, you were on Fox News there, were you in Rockefeller Plaza, actually there in the green room and all that stuff today?
We were this morning at 6:20.
Yeah, I got to do that a few years ago. So you were on Fox and Friends. This is a weekend edition. And, yep. Well, share with us what that was like.
Oh, that was incredible. I mean, it is just, got, like we've been talking about, and this is the theme of the program, this whole 5 years has been God working through us. You know, gradually, this is a three-man team that started in New Orleans. All we wanted to do was put something on a website and hopefully change one life. And then through the support and prayers of so many people, we traveled the state of Louisiana, and then we traveled all around the Southeast. And then we went nationwide. And then to be on Fox News, where we're interacting globally, was just incredible. I was humbling to be able to just realize that we put so much work into this.
Yeah, well, I hate we got to go to a break, but February 24th has been a big day for I Lived on Parker Avenue. So we've got so much more Kingdom Pursuits coming up.
Tomorrow, I'm going to hop on a train, and I will meet my birth parents for the first time. This has been 19 years in the making, and I'm extremely nervous.
I want to see what he looks like in person, his voice, his smile, my hug. I've been waiting.
Kind of wondered, you know, does he hate us? You know, I think it's caused a lot of depression from time to time.
The reality is, David was seconds, literally, from not being here. It's kind of a bittersweet because I wanted him.
We're going to all fill in this missing piece of the puzzle that has been in all three of our lives.
It's going to be an overwhelming experience.
I'm nervous, but I'm really excited. I remember all these protesters being lined up. I remember this lady saying, "Yeah, baby has 10 fingers and 10 toes, and you're gonna kill it." So all those people, when I was walking out, they thought I did it.
I don't want to live my life not ever knowing what might have been.
The amazing short film being released on March 8th, I Lived on Parker Avenue, issues related to abortions, adoption. We've got David Sutton Scotton with us today, who's obviously from Louisiana in law school. And wow, what a story that is. We're going to be talking about that more in a minute. We have Michael Austin with us. He is the editor of Christian History Magazine, where they announced their issue 111 again, Billy Graham, the Apostle of Change and Lives and Second Chances. But since I know another bit about Michael, this story of David's is near and dear to your heart, because one time you got involved in this and you didn't say 10 fingers and 10 toes. You talked about honking.
Well, yes. the Lord got a hold of me on this issue a couple of years ago, when it became apparent that their, you know, sale of body parts had penetrated the news, and it had been going on for a long time. But at that time, I got myself down to a sidewalk to protest in front of Planned Parenthood, and the outcome of that basically was to develop a website that gives people who are on that sidewalk protesting a way to engage folks that are driving by in their car wondering what all the commotion is about. And that honkforlife.org website is attracting attention all over the nation, because it basically allows people to download a graphic file. They can take that down to a print shop, have a poster or a sign or a yard sign, a placard made, very professional looking. You can even read it a couple of blocks away, and it says "Honk for Life," and it gives motorists an opportunity to join your protest. So that's a very simple, easy way to that folks can.
But you had a personal experience with that, Michael, where, you know, that actually affected people in ways that you didn't originally think.
Well, I did. After that happened, and when those horns started honking, I realized, you know what? There's a mom inside this building who's about to lose their most precious child, and she can hear that honk, and she may ask, "What's that about?" There's a so-called doctor in there who probably has taken a pledge to preserve life and is doing just the opposite. He's going to hear that honk, and by the way, it affected so many people in that place. Eventually, it led to the director of that abortion clinic, the Planned Parenthood clinic in Asheville, North Carolina, to resign. She's now on our side. So, wow, the power of the medium, and in this case, the medium of the horn. By the way, the horn, it, by law, has to be installed in a car to warn people of danger. And that's what we were doing that day, because that was about the most dangerous building in the city right then for particularly the unborn child.
And David, in the movie, I noticed that clinic is no longer open either, is it?
Correct. It is not. It's now a medical health facility. Which is kind of ironic, but right, it's no longer an abortion clinic.
And you know, you can't help but think that God is watching over all these things all the time, giving us ways out of our horrible choices. You know, me too, in so many different ways, and other things that I'm involved in that I shouldn't be. That, you know, He's finding a way that, wow, here's a honk, here's a reminder, somebody's saying 10 fingers, 10 toes. It's so wonderful the way your birth mother remembered that. And the other thing that I think is really, really remarkable in your story, David, is your adoptive mother being so open to your relationship with your birth mother. That isn't always the case, I imagine, with adoptive parents, but that's real love, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And that is not the case in all adoptions. You know, sometimes it may not be in the best interest of the child for the child to meet his or her birth parent. But for me, it was. And the fact that my mom was so supportive made this even better. And she wanted to thank Melissa for the gift of her son. And so she was more excited than I was to meet Melissa and Brian.
And there's a really, you know, kind of spoiler alert, but nonetheless, I'm hoping you'll see the movie regardless. But there's a point where you go back and you revisit with your birth mom again. And, you know, you kind of expected your mother to be there on the first visit, but they showed up on the second one, and you can see where that took Melissa's breath away, that your mother came to visit her again, and you could see the love between those two. It was It was remarkable. I mean, you could see she was, like, so grateful that your mom came along, and it just was like, wow. I mean, that was such a picture of what heaven is. That here's this tremendous love for one another, and life being just lived to the fullest. The beauty of that film is that you just see life in so many different ways in that connection, and the dinner scenes, you know, and you guys handing out those letters and stuff. Like, wow, man.
Yeah, hit on. It was good. That was one of my favorite scenes. It was just a remarkable moment. That scene in particular, I just wanted to affirm everyone that they're significant and their worth and just, like, placed in my life. And before I went and met my birth parents. And it was just rewarding for everyone at that table.
Mm. Oh, you
I can
see
imagine.
It.
I'd just like to give a shout out for adoption, Robbie, and a personal note, because out of 8 cousins that I had, all but 2 were adopted. And my fondest memories of my childhood in relationship with my cousins was among those adopted brothers and sisters of mine. That's how I feel about them. But and that lasts to this very day. You know, the Bible teaches us that we are all adopted in, and there's a significant added layer of love that people can participate in and enjoy through adoption. It's such a blessing.
Yeah, and again, we talked a lot about moms. I don't want to leave out your dad. There are several scenes in there with him. Can you tell us about how he took all that?
Sure. So my birth father...
your dad.
Okay, yeah. So he's not a very emotional guy. And so when they were... And Philip, like that we talked about earlier, was doing the interviews. He didn't let me be in the room for when my parents were being interviewed. And then when I saw that clip, when I saw the interview, I was shocked, like taken back. He was so emotionally vulnerable and put himself out there and was just honest with the camera. And it was just so genuine and heartfelt to see him say what he said. And he felt the same way that my mom did. He was excited to have the opportunity to thank Melissa and Brian for the gift of his only son. And this meant the world to him to have this opportunity. And I'm so glad he was so excited about this.
Yeah, it's an amazing thing to see, you know, that family unity on that issue. And those grandparents, are those your mother's parents or your father's parents?
Those are my mother's parents. And I'm an only child, so I have a very small family. It's basically me, my parents, and my grandparents. And so they've been pivotal in my life. I would not be who I am today without my grandparents. So it was important for me for them to come on this trip.
Yeah, I could see that, and I could see what a role they played in that in so many different ways. Obviously, we don't realize that, you know, if our grandparents hadn't treated our parents in a certain way, they wouldn't have loved us. You know, they would have been in a different place. But clearly,
right.
You know, that was a generational gift that you got as an adoptive grandson.
Right. Absolutely.
And that's an amazing thing. It's really a beautiful picture. Again, it's called I Lived on Parker Avenue. You can find out their website, et cetera, which you might guess is I Lived on Parker Avenue. But anyway, you can go to kingdompursuits.com and find out about it. as well as Christian History Magazine's, you know, Billy Graham issue that's available now that you can read about this as we're all remembering the wonderful life God gave us of Billy Graham. Well, David, I am so grateful for how God has used you, and I'll be looking forward to doing a later show with you on how God took your passion as an attorney and used it to build the kingdom, okay?
Absolutely. I'm going to do my best.
Thank you, Michael. I hope to see you next
week. Thank you.
God bless.
I hope so, Robbie. God bless you.
And I, again, am always so thankful for all of you listening to Kingdom Pursuits. I should say the first baby killer, I think, was Pharaoh, but you can think about that. So much truth coming at you on the Truth Network.